News Radio 690 KTSM presents the second hour of the El Paso History Show with documentary filmmaker Jackson Polk and historian Melissa Sargent, streaming live at ktsmradio.com. Brought to you by Patrick Tuttle Legacy Real Estate Services, 915-585-7777. By Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant, home of the one and only margarita. And by Keystone Heritage Park on Donovan Drive, 915-584-0563. By Monterey Asset Management. And by Mission Del Rey, 1421 Lee Trevino, with El Paso souvenirs and gift shopping. And now, El Paso History with Melissa Sargent and Jackson Polk.
Jackson here, let you know, ephistory690@gmail.com. We'll take an email from you, and we'll get to that as you wish. You know, ring us up on an email. Why not? Now we're going to start the history show here, second hour, with a history moment by Melissa Sargent. I've heard of her. She's famous, very famous.
In her own mind.
And so there you are. But the history moment is produced by Melissa for the El Paso History Alliance. And her history moment today is about how World War I U.S. soldiers came to be known as the Doughboys.
What's in a nickname? World War I was the first time in our country's history that U.S. soldiers were deployed to Europe to defend foreign soil. And when General John Pershing and the troops arrived by ship in the French port of Boulogne, the French citizens on the crowded piers ecstatically welcomed the arrival of soldiers by crying out, Vive l'Amérique! Nicknames for U.S. troops were endearing and plentiful both in the U.S. and European war theaters. Some of those nicknames were Pershing's Crusaders, Yanks, and Sammies, but the most memorable of the nicknames was Doughboys. Though there are many stories of the origin of the name, the strongest historic fact is that it is tied to General John Pershing's punitive expeditionary forces on the Mexican border. After Pancho Villa's soldiers attacked the town of Columbus, New Mexico, Pershing's infantry marched south into Mexico to pursue and capture Pancho Villa and his soldiers. It was there that the Army's cavalry division started to refer to the foot soldiers, who were covered in white desert dust from their march, as adobes or dobies. And within months, it soon morphed into doughboys. More history next time on El Paso History Moments. I'm Melissa Sargent for the El Paso History Alliance.
And you're so allied.
I know. You know, it's so funny. I got to point out, I was looking at a total different history moment, and I stumbled into this article that was kind of within the article I was looking at for part of my research.
Where do you find this stuff?
Just search internet. Up. The internet.
Just search around?
Yeah, I just search around. I go, and it's a problem because sometimes I have an idea what I want to do. I go to look to research and make sure I'm doing it right. And then I find out, no, look at this. This is even more interesting. And this was a little bit of in the middle of a major story that they talked about this with the Doughboys. I was like, That's really cool.
Why not?
You know, so, hey, you know, it's interesting. And it's an El Paso thing because you know it had to have started here because this is where most of the
Pershing stuff.
Pershing's troops were.
Yeah.
So I think it's fascinating. All the stuff that comes out of El Paso.
A lot of history there. And yeah, you're still doing those history moments on a regular fill-in basis, the 60-second versions that are across all the schedule for 690. And I keep hearing about the carnation milk.
I need to make a moo. Well, we want to thank, like us, we're all doing this for fun. I mean, not fun, but also it's a hobby, but also a loved to promote our history. And the El Paso History Alliance group is another one on Facebook who is doing this. It's managed by Max Grossman. And they now have over 60,000 followers.
60? Change that.
And they're chock full of stories and pictures and information on El Paso history and preservation. You need to check it out. It's the El Paso History Alliance Facebook page. And then we can't forget another great partner in El Paso history work, and that's Barbara Given-Bainey and her crew.
BGB.
BGB. She's the administrator of this great Facebook page called Remember in El Paso When. Go there for archive pictures galore, and they have 35,000 now?
Bunch of them.
A whole bunch.
I saw 33 the last time I looked on there. And Bernie Sarge is sitting here, is a guy who you can also contact about some of that
about
stuff.
Him.
581-792-0. There we go. Call him up, but not right now. He's busy.
Yes.
But the thing is, Barbara does that for fun and profit, but there's no profit. It's all fun.
Yeah,
actually,
trust
I think it's,
me.
It sounds like it's just a lot of work for her, but she does it. Craig Hayes is a moderator. Barbara is the administrator, chief bottle washer. Ken Weiss, Paul Louis, and Bernie Sargent.
Bernie,
thank you for being here. Oh, but reminder, Pepe's is closed, and they're not closed because they're bad people. They're closed because of COVID restrictions in the county.
Yeah.
And Bernie, they're actually in the county. Is that what makes a difference?
Well, the city police department has, I don't know, as of yesterday, But previous to that, they were not enforcing those rules.
But the county is.
The county is. Now,
the
ATF was coming in town, and they were going into bars in the city limits and enforcing
and drinking heavily. No. They were just checking they're in their job. But the thing about that is, I mean, Pepe's, he has a liquor license. He can't jeopardize that.
No.
I talked to him this morning. He said he'll be back in business maybe Wednesday. Call him.
Okay.
Yeah, checking on their Facebook page also.
Put it on Facebook, dude. Yeah. So there's that. All right.
Yeah, also, it's sad because traditionally we meet there almost every Saturday after the radio show.
Yeah, we do.
We'll have upwards of 20 people be there to talk history and just share some laughs and have a good time together.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Well, just on our table alone, we pay for the radio spot.
It's true.
And so everything else he does out there is easy.
He should tip us.
Well, he should. He kind of does. Sometimes we get freebies out of him.
Yeah, that's true.
But the thing about Pepe's is they're good people. Support them when they come back. And right now you can't even call them to send out of town, but when it comes back, you can actually do that for Christmas presents.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing, just sit there with your phone, call them up, give them a credit card and an address, and they'll ship it wherever. So that's another thing to think about. Okay, the Civil War in El Paso, nothing came in the way of battles. There were troops here. Fort Bliss turned over from the Union to the Confederates.
Mm-hmm.
Texas went Confederate.
Mm-hmm.
There were slave owners in El Paso that we found out about.
Yeah.
And so, Bernie Sargent, wrap that up for us. What happened to El Paso in the Civil War?
Let's go back a few months before we really got involved with the Civil War. Abraham Lincoln had gotten elected. It was a brand new party, and he got elected perhaps because there were three Democrats running for president at the same time. Traditionally, it was a Southern individual would get elected as president, Southern being Virginia and South. But because of the situation with the six opponents, most people feel that that's why he got elected. Now, that created a lot of angst amongst the Southern states because they knew his politics were such that he wanted to abolish slavery. And they depended heavily on slavery, including Texas, for the processing, production, picking, and so on of all the vegetables, fruit, and cotton, and so on. And cotton was a big staple in the South, as it was in Texas. It was a huge commodity that brought a lot of money into the new fledgling state of Texas. So when in 1860, when he got elected, it was December of that year that South Carolina seceded from the Union, and they started sort of a domino effect, and it wasn't long before six more states joined them, including Texas. And when the vote came to Texas, and it would have been in February of 1861, it was not unanimous, but it was like 146-7 voted to secede, including, Sam Houston. Now, Sam Houston refused to endorse secession because he owned slaves, but he knew the Union was stronger. They had industry. They had an income. They had population. And so he told his fellow politicians in Texas that this was it was futile. It was going to end with no good.
Ain't gonna work.
Ain't gonna happen. And because of that, he lost his position as the governor of Texas. And in fact, all the way up to the day he died, he had remorse over that. But he went by his convictions that the Texas and the South would lose. Well, it was only
we need more of that today.
Yeah, I know. It was only a short time later when El Paso decided that they wanted to vote to support and endorse Texas secession, and they called a meeting. Now, at the time, there was a handful of Anglos in city of El Paso. They called them the 44. They controlled everything, businesses and institutions of ill repute. Everything that was controlled by the 44. So when they took a vote of all of El Paso County, only two people voted against secession. One was Anson Mills and one was W.W. Mills. And the vote was held in secret at the Bendel Saloon. Now, for a long time, I thought it was held at Hart's Mill because Simeon Hart kind of ramrodded or led the secession movement in El Paso. But it was actually held at Bendel Saloon. And Anson Mills walked into the meeting with one of his very good friends by the name of Giddings, who was a judge who was conducting the meeting arm in arm. Just prior to that, on the newspaper tree, which was the only way that they would get press out to the public before newspapers were published, there was a couple of notes of hatred of Anson Mills because they knew his feelings supported the North, and a lot of threats. And he challenged them. He challenged these people that wrote in including Giddings and a few others, that if they wanted to meet and square up, that he would do that. Simeon Hart had slaves, yeah. It was not uncommon in Texas or in El Paso. So anyway, they went into the meeting. They knew that he was going to vote against secession. But the people in there, for the most part, honored his convictions went with it. They voted all except for two to secede. Anson Mills and his brother, William Wallace Mills, both left town the next day. Now, Anson kind of hung around a little bit, and as it turned out, the majority of the military officers that seceded or joined the secession were from the South, and the majority of them had served with their Union cohorts in Mexico fighting Mexico. So they knew each other. And it was a lot of consternation over the separation of the two countries. And what happened in Texas was there was a commanding officer by the name of Twiggs who had convinced the soldiers in Texas to join the secession. Anson Mills was not one of those that would do that. So the majority of the officers serving in Texas and in the New Mexico Territory decided to go with the Confederacy. Now, there was a Union officer that was up at Camp Fillmore, Fort Fillmore, and he was not in line with this. He didn't want to join the secession. He had been brought over from Arizona by the commanding general, Canby, who was in Santa Fe, and he knew that the previous commanding officer at Fillmore was a Southern sympathizer, so he replaced him, and that particular officer went immediately to the Confederacy. So they were trying to line up support along the Rio Grande for the Union because they knew that the Confederacy had aspirations of marching north from San Antonio to El Paso and then going up the Camino Real, ultimately into Colorado, and then west to California.
Well, they did do that, right?
They got as far as almost Santa Fe,
Glorieta Pass.
They got that far. On the way up there.
And that was Shelby or Sibley or who was?
Sibley. He was a commanding general.
Got it.
Yeah, Baylor was his senior exec. And, okay. When Sibley was drunk most of the time.
Oh, boy.
They said that he lost because of John Barleycorn, which is a nickname for liquor.
Yes. Yeah. And that Baylor was the Baylor of the university?
Yes.
Oh, my.
Yes.
What a history.
He went on to be
and he was a Confederate.
He was.
Oh, my.
Yeah. He was he was a Union before. I mean, I should say
got
American.
It. Yeah, he was. Just like Robert E. Lee used to be a major general in the Union forces until a little incident of the Civil War.
But their state said they were going this way, and they were part of the state, went with them. And they were marching north, and they got as far as Fort Craig, which was just north of what's present-day Elephant Butte Reservoir.
Right.
And it was such a significant fortress that the Confederates felt they couldn't win if they attacked it. So they proceeded to go north, and commander of that base was a guy by the name of Lind. He ignored all of the warnings that the Confederates were coming up the pass. Even though he outmanned and outgunned the Confederates, he just kind of blew it off. It's not going to happen. Well, it did happen. They got north of Fort Craig to a place called Valverde, where they crossed the river, and they had a skirmish with the Union forces, and they were poorly commanded. They just did a horrible job, so the Confederates won. Now, tie that to El Paso history a little bit closer. There was a cannon that was manufactured in the 1840s in Massachusetts and had found its way to Fort Craig and then found its way to Via Verde to the skirmish there. And during the skirmish, the artillery commanding officer, was a gentleman by the name of McCrae. And he was killed during the skirmish and fell on that cannon. And to this day, the stains from McCrae are on that cannon. That cannon's at Eastwood High School.
Eastwood High School has a cannon.
There you go. And the street is named McCrae.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
The street?
Yeah. It's on McCrae.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that.
Oh, my goodness. What a history there. All right. We got to take a break here. Bernie Sargent is talking Civil War here. And, of course, there was nothing civil about it, but that how that happened, I have no idea. But we're going to take a break. You got something on Facebook you want to talk about?
Joe, I just want to be posting up the picture shortly of our guest today. And then not really much, just everybody's out there kind of asking questions. And so it's just really great. It's active. So it's the El Paso History Radio Show Facebook page. And you can also call us. we can do tape calls.
Yeah, whatever. There's not a lot of activity over there right now.
It's kind of nice weather. People are squeezing it in there. 915-544-5876 or 915-544-KTSM.
Visit Mission Del Rey Southwest for a huge selection of El Paso souvenirs and gifts. Mission Del Rey features El Paso saddle blanket products and thousands of Southwest, Western, Native American, and Mexico items for gifts and decor. Bring your friends and mention you heard us on the radio for a store-wide discount. Mission Del Rey Southwest, 1421 Lee Trevino. Enter on Pelicano. Go to missiondelrey.com or call 915-440-2140 for Mission Del Rey Southwest.
If you don't know what to do when you get lost on a hike, Stuff You Should Know, an incomplete compendium of mostly interesting things, is here to help. And it also has an entire chapter on donuts. That's less useful if you're on a hike, but I mean, tell me that's not Stuff You Should Know. Stuff You Should Know, an incomplete compendium of mostly interesting things. Pre-order now at stuffyoushouldknow.com or wherever books are sold.
Hi, this is Jay Farner, CEO of Rocket Mortgage. Making the right financial decisions has never been more important. We can help guide you to those right decisions now when they matter most. Mortgage rates are near historic lows. So when you call 8338-ROCKET or visit us at rocketmortgage.com to start your refinance, you'll be well on your way to saving money every month. The rate today on our 30-year fixed-rate mortgage is 3.125%, APR 3.43%. Right now could be a great time for you to take some positive financial steps forward with a cash-out refinance from Rocket Mortgage, which could give you the boost that you're looking for. In addition, we may be able to help you refinance with little or no out-of-pocket costs. At Rocket Mortgage, we're committed to every client, every time, no exceptions, no excuses, giving you the best mortgage experience. Call us today at 8338-ROCKET or go to rocketmortgage.com to learn more.
Rates subject to change. Pay 2.875% fee to receive this discounted rate. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. License in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030.
Is a superior form of vitamin C. It's the only vitamin C with 24-hour immune support, and it lasts up to 2 times longer than regular vitamin C. So don't just settle for any vitamin C. Buy Ester C and support your immune health today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Capital One checking and savings accounts have no fees or minimums and a top-rated banking app that lets you manage your money anytime, anywhere, even from your favorite hiking trail. With Capital One's app, you can check your balance, deposit checks, pay bills, and transfer money from wherever you are anytime you want, even when you're cooking dinner. Open a fee-free checking or savings account online in about 5 minutes. This is banking reimagined. Capital One, what's in your wallet?
Consumer accounts only. Approval required. Terms apply. Capital One N.A. Member FDIC.
News Radio 690 KTSM.
And now let's turn back the pages of time and return to the El Paso History Show. Brought to you by Patrick Tuttle Legacy Real Estate Services, 915-585-7777. Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant, 6761 Donovan Drive. By Monterey Asset Management. By Mission Del Rey, 1421 Lee Trevino, with El Paso souvenirs and gift shopping. By Keystone Heritage Park on Donovan Drive, 915-584-0563. Here again, El Paso History with Melissa Sargent and Jackson Polk.
Who's coming in here next week, you ask? Actually, by phone, it'll be Felipe Solis and Zool Bailey.
Ooh.
They're going to describe the history of Pearl Musica and also music in El Paso. And then we're going to hear music that Zool has played in historic El Paso locations.
That's cool.
So when you tune in next week, it sounds like NPR. No, it's Zool Bailey on his cello.
Cello. I thought you said he played jello.
Oh, he eats that. But that'll be next week on the 14th, November 21. Check this out. The topic is early El Paso artists, and our guest is Hal Marcus, an El Paso artist and gallery owner who lists El Paso artists from here who painted our history onto their canvases. Hal, and we asked Patricia to join him, his wife, and they're going to share their exhibit, Early El Paso Master Dead Artist Exhibit. Master Dead Artist Exhibit. And it's on the gallery in Oregon Street, although I think technically you can't go there. But he said he's going to get his phone, walk across the street from his house, and do the show from there on his phone and explain what he's got. So he's going to, we got pictures we'll put up.
That'll
now, here's a different one. November the 28th, Father Pinto. He has a great influence on El Paso way back in the 1890s coming forward. He established many of the Catholic churches that are here. He's buried in Concordia Cemetery. We're going to hear about him from Senator Lazario historian Sam Sanchez Sr. And I'm digging up a couple more people, not in the graveyard, but to come on live and talk. And also,
dead historians.
No, these are live guys. But they'll also talk about, I got some guys in mind to help Sam out there. So what do you got?
Well, the El Paso Archaeological Society, or EPAS, which was founded in 1922 as a nonprofit group, is still active and membership is open to individuals and organizations interested in anthropology, archaeology, and in the preservation of prehistoric and historic culture. And they've got a website where you can find out more information, and that's the epass.com, and you can sign up your membership there. And they do some great things. They do archaeological tours. They do volunteers do digs, volunteer extra items they do for kid programs. And they've been organized as a nonprofit with the Orneda Research Institute of Tularosa, New Mexico. So that's pretty impressive. That's a huge site up there. So definitely give it, you know, they need volunteers, and you learn a lot. You don't have to be an archaeologist. You don't have to have been a student of it. You can just go out there and learn from there and become addicted.
You get a newsletter as a member, and that's really cool. They got stuff from all over the planet that they've dug up, literally. and it's really interesting things that they find in there. Anyway, El Paso Archaeological Society. Okay, Bernie Sargent's here. We're talking stuff in the Civil War. Why don't you take the cannon and deal with that? Because where would you leave us off with the cannon?
With McRae dying on it.
Okay, McRae died on the cannon somewhere up in a battle in New Mexico.
Yeah, Valverde.
Valverde. And that was a cannon that was a Southern cannon?
Well, it was a Union cannon to start.
Okay.
And I'm still trying to trace and see if it actually made it into Mexico during the Mexican-American War. I haven't been able to find that because I know the cannon was built or manufactured in 1846. And that's about the time frame they were moving a lot of artillery south.
That would be when they put in a bunch of gunpowder and a fuse, stuff in a wad of stuff, and then a ball in front of that and more stuff.
Yeah.
And blow the heck out of somebody in front of it.
Hopefully.
Wow.
Yeah, and it was after the bronze cannons were in style and fashionable. And they were learning how to rifle them so that the projectile would go further and more accurately.
Like a rifle.
Exactly.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So anyway, where I left off, the Confederates won that battle, and they absconded with all the artillery, including the particular cannon we were talking about.
And a whole pile of black powder, I'm sure.
Of black powder, a lot of ammunition and stuff. Yeah, it was. They should have lost, but they won. You know, they were smarter. They actually practice guerrilla fighting much better than the Union forces did. They were hiding and using the terrain so that they could take advantage of the situation. They marched north and garnered all the military bases going north. The Union forces had pulled out in advance of them getting there, knowing that they were pretty much outnumbered and outgunned. They got as far as almost Santa Fe to Glorieta Pass. And when they got up there, they battled with they were called the Colorado Regulars, and then a handful of California Regulars had met them. They outnumbered, outgunned Union forces up there, but Sibley, John Barleycorn,
got him, huh?
You got him, yeah. They had gotten a little bit lackadaisical about protecting their ammunition and their food, all of their supplies. They had placed them in a canyon. Well, there was a number of locals that were more leaning towards the north of the Union, so they alerted the Union forces of the location and the fact that there was only a handful of guards for the Confederates of the ammunition and supplies. So they scaled down the walls of the cliffs, attacked and destroyed all of the ammunition, all of the food provisions, and killed all the guards. And Baylor and Sibley knew that they were on thin ground there, so they needed to retreat and get out of there. So the retreat was kind of catastrophic for the Southern sympathizers. They lost a lot of people from starvation, the desert, Indians. It was not a good thing for them.
They had to come back down the Jornada del Muerto.
They did.
Oh,
they did. Some of them just headed west. Some headed east, got lost, and then some headed south and down into El Paso.
And nobody took I-25?
No, because it was a toll road back then.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
They didn't have the toll.
No. So they headed south.
Enough of that. Go ahead.
A handful of the folks ended up back down here.
But they buried the cannon.
Before they left that area, they went into Albuquerque, and they buried all of the cannons in Albuquerque. And then they continued south because they didn't want the Union forces to regain all that artillery, including the stuff they had brought along with them from San Antonio. They got back down into El Paso, and they actually bivouacked or stayed at Hart's Mill. You know, Simeon Hart was a huge Southern sympathizer. He made a lot of money off that war. He was actually a commissioned officer for the Confederacy. So they stayed there at what is now La Hacienda Restaurant. They stayed there. That was before they served food.
And Chip Johns had tacos ready for
them. He had them ready, yes. He did. And he stayed there. They stayed there. They also acquisitioned the Overland stage building downtown and made that a hospital. And they put a lot of their wounded and infirmed, sick soldiers in that particular hospital. Well, in 1862, when the Union forces came back in and retook El Paso, which, by the way, the fort was in Concordia at the time of this whole event that took place on roughly Alameda Street is where Fort Bliss was. They retook it. They actually went into the Overland Stage Building and captured it, captured all the Confederate soldiers, but they used their medical teams to nurse them back to health. And they did what was traditional back in the day. They allowed them to go back to the Confederate military if they chose, or stay there and pledge allegiance to the Union. And those that didn't survive the their sickness or their wounds were buried across El Paso Street, approximately where San Antonio and Overland Street is, in a small cemetery that they put there. I think there was 27 Confederate soldiers that were ultimately buried there.
So the cannon made it way down to El Paso?
Well, it was in Albuquerque. 25 to 30 years later, there was a gentleman who was a Union soldier traveling on a train going through Albuquerque, and he struck up a conversation with a Confederate soldier, and we'll finish this after the break.
Pick that up after the break, because we also got Daryl on hold, and we got to come back and do El Paso. It's a busy moment all of a sudden here.
Oh, I know.
544-5876-544-KTSM.
With over 19 years of experience in the El Paso real estate market, Patrick Tuttle has successfully navigated the ups and downs of uncertain markets, including the last recession, and he can assist you in buying or selling in the current market. Call him today, 915-588-1850.
Hi, I'm Patrick Tuttle with Legacy Real Estate Services. I offer flexible fees, no upfront costs, and if you don't like me, fire me. Call me today at 915-588-1850. 588-1850.
Hey guys, remember when you used to look forward to intimacy? Do you find yourself getting anxious or stressed out about it, even avoiding the situation? Studies show that more than half of men over 50 will experience ED over the course of their life. Viagra only works some of the time, and side effects can be brutal. Oasis Men's Health uses acoustic wave energy to treat the real cause of ED. By breaking down plaque, blood flow is restored, and you are back in the game. No pills, no shots, no pain. Isn't it time you put the stress of ED behind you for good? Schedule a consultation today at oasismenshealth.com or give us a call at 575-652-4444. That's 575-652-4444. Call Oasis Men's Health at 575-652-4444. 575-652-4444. HSA cards welcome.
What does COVID-19 have to do with losing your home? Well, a lot. Cybercrime is up 75% since the virus hit us. Rudy Giuliani here, and if you own a home or property, look out for home title theft, one of the fastest growing crimes. The legal titles to all our homes are online now. All thieves have to do is forge your signature on a quitclaim deed stating you sold your home. Then they take out loan after loan on your home and leave you in debt. You won't know until late payment or eviction notices show up. Homeowners insurance doesn't cover you, and neither do common identity theft programs. That's why I protect my home with Home Title Lock. Home Title Lock puts a barrier around your home's title. The instant they detect tampering, they shut it down. Go to HomeTitleLock.com and register your address to see if you're already a victim. Then use code Rudy for 30 free days of protection. I protect my home with Home Title Lock. Go to HomeTitleLock.com and register your address to see if you're already a victim. That's code Rudy at HomeTitleLock.com.
Would you get on an airplane if you knew it had a 50% chance of crashing? You may be riding that plane right now. If you have your money in a 401k or IRA and you plan to take out the recommended percentage each year when you retire, your chance of running out of money is 50%. 50%. But there's a better and safer way to secure your income in retirement. Discover how in a free book called Rescue Your Retirement. This wealth-building strategy has never had a losing year in more than a century. In fact, even the man who invented the 401k now prefers this method instead. Get Rescue Your Retirement free for just a small shipping charge and enjoy a safe landing and a comfortable retirement. Get this free book and make sure you don't run out of money. Hurry, this offer is extremely limited. To get your free copy, just go to growwealthsafely.com. That's growwealthsafely.com to discover how to rescue your retirement. growwealthsafely.com.
News Radio 690, KTSM El Paso.
And now let's turn back the pages of time and return to the El Paso History Show. Brought to you by Patrick Tuttle Legacy Real Estate Services, 915-585-7777. Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant, 6761 Donovan Drive. By Monterey Asset Management. By Mission Del Rey, 1421 Lee Trevino with El Paso Souvenirs and Gift Shopping. By Keystone Heritage Park on Donovan Drive, 915-584-0563. Here again, El Paso History with Melissa Sargent and Jackson Polk.
Are you ready for this week only in El Paso Inc.?
Yeah. Okay. One of El Paso's most recognizable craft breweries has big plans for a new space in South Central El Paso and expansion.
Mayor D. Margo and businessman Oscar Leeser talk to El Paso Inc. as they head to a runoff election next month.
The Best of El Paso Inc. is back, and this year's marks the debut of a new mobile app, available for free download today, offering a sneak peek at 2020 award winners.
El Paso's Business Journal, El Paso Inc., is available for home or business delivery.
To receive ElPasoInc.com, receive El Paso Inc., order it online at ElPasoInc.com.
Tomorrow night on ABC 7 Extra, this has been an election like no other. Okay, so that will be the topic of ABC 7 Extra this week. Stephanie Valle hosts a special election wrap-up looking at the race for the White House and Congress, plus a look ahead toward the runoff for mayor here in El Paso.
ABC 7 Extra Sunday nights after weekend ABC 7 Extra news.
Okay, we have Bernie here. We've also got Daryl Hyatt. He's about to come on the phone. And Daryl, did you run that cannon in the Civil War?
No, but one of my relatives was involved.
Oh, no, really?
Actually, my mother's side of the family, they were Chaffins. They came to Texas in 1820 with the Battle of San Jacinto in 1836. But anyway, they came out with the Alabama artillery and in the Civil War, and they were in the Battle of Alverde. And what was so important about that whole campaign was that was going to open up the road for the Confederacy to move into California and to bring in supplies and different things that would have had a totally different outcome on the Civil War. But Shivington did an end run on they won the battle but lost the campaign because Shivington did the end run and captured their ammunition and supplies, and then so that they did have to flee south. So my relative, he was laid up in Fort Craig, and then they sent him down to Fort Bliss, and then he was mustered out with serious illnesses and stuff. But it even ties in with the Trost issue because Anson Mills and there was the Orndorff Hotel, the Orndorff family, they worked with Anson Mills to create a lot of military accoutrements, the Mills belt and the belt buckles, and anyway, quite a significant tie-in with what later the Trost and those families had designed other buildings what have you.
Daryl, as always, we thank you for your input, and you're not going to Pepe's today.
No, I'm really sorry for the hearing that they're shutting down everything, and folks like Pepe's is they have nothing but my admiration that they're still attempting to, in the way of doing carryouts.
No, they can't. No, that's closed. Carryout is closed. Okay. Well, thanks for calling up, Daryl.
Yeah. You're welcome.
Bye-bye, Daryl.
We'll see you at Pepe's eventually, but not even takeout right now.
Soon. We'll be there soon.
All right, Bernie.
I'm going to be optimistic.
Bernie, finish the Cannon story. Good guy. What happened?
Well, first of all, I've got to thank Daryl because he's been very generous with some of his history books and just really enjoy reading a lot of this stuff. That's where I'm getting a lot of my information, and he's a wealth of knowledge. Also shows up, as he was alluding to, at Pepe's almost every Saturday when we're there. Okay, back to the cannon. So anyway, they bury the cannons. About 25 to 30 years later, there's a gentleman who is a Union soldier vet sitting next to a Confederate soldier vet, and they're discussing the Civil War. And the gentleman that was talking with the Confederate, he asked him, he said, do you happen to know where those cannons were buried? And he told him, yeah, I know exactly where they're buried. So with a little bit of effort, because things changed over 30 years in Albuquerque, they managed to dig the cannons up, and a couple of them came back down to El Paso, one of which was the infamous Blue Whistler cannon that Captain McRae had died on. Brought it down to El Paso. It became part of the McGinty Club, and they would use that cannon to fire off for special events, elections, 4th of July, things like that, for a few years until it was retired and parked on a park ground in front of the county headquarters, the county building. And it was there for a number of years. Then it was 1911 on St. Patrick's Day where it was stolen in the middle of the night. Actually, there's kind of conversation that perhaps
that
they paid. Yeah, they paid off the police officer that was standing guard downtown to keep the peace. And the cannon disappeared. And as they towed it away from the site, the wheel came off the cannon, and it was very, very heavy. They were adjacent to a railroad, and the railroad train was coming through, and a couple of hobos jumped off the train and right into the oncoming path of the limo, I should say, the large vehicle pulling the cannon, and saw them standing there. Well, these guys went over, and they paid the two hobos a few dollars to help them lift the cannon to put the wheel back on.
Oh, why not?
Yeah, why not? And then they continued up the hill. They were heading to Fort Boulevard. That's where they were going. They were going to hide the cannon there, recondition it, and then loan it to the Mexicans to fight in their attempt to fight against the revolutionaries. On the way there, again, the wheel came off. Well, it's pretty late in the morning now, and there's a couple of gentlemen who have enjoyed a lot of adult beverages. We're driving along.
A lot of that going on back then.
Yeah, I know. Again, John Barleycorn strikes. They pulled up, and they saw what was going on, and the guys commandeered them, said they would buy them a few drinks if they would help them lift the cannon to put the wheel back on.
Sure, I can do that.
Yeah. All right, sure.
I can do it. So they finally got it up to where the destination. It was in the backyard of a lady's home. And they restored it and then piece by piece took it into Mexico. And it was used by the rebels down there to fight. And in fact, I've got pictures of it at the Battle of Oinaga. And it was, jeez, I believe, August 11th of the same year. They brought it back to great ceremony to El Paso. They had people meet him at the bridge. They had bands playing the whole bit. And here came back the cannon, the Blue Whistler cannon. So that's a little bit of the history of the cannon.
How did it get to Eastwood High School?
It was, I believe, 1965. It had become the possession of the Pioneer Association of El Paso.
You're a member of that.
I am a member of that. And it was given to us back then. That was before my time here. And they, in turn, had loaned it to Eastwood High School to use as their sort of moniker or symbol. And for a period of time, they did actually fire it a few times at football games, but then they retired it. Now,
that must have been loud.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my.
Oh, can you imagine?
Oh, yeah.
People out of the stands just with the sound.
Yeah.
And concussion.
Well, several years ago, Eastwood High School went under a whole renovation, and they built a new gymnasium, new locker rooms, new classrooms, and they set aside a special place just for that cannon. And they did that. They had the cannon totally restored. It looks gorgeous. It's beautiful.
Does it still fire?
No.
Sure?
Well, they plugged the hole for the fuse.
You don't want to try.
Yeah, you could probably drill it out, but I don't think I want to try it after all
that
these
years. That'd make an interesting afternoon.
Maybe once.
Ring the bell. Yeah. Oh, what's this?
So it's on exhibit there, and I'm working on a story for them to use to put to mark the history of that cannon.
Good God.
Pretty fascinating. Now, there's some people are Well, let's just say they don't agree that that's the Blue Whistler cannon.
Oh.
And yet we have the serial number and we have the date of manufacture. We have a lot of information that substantiates the very same cannon. So we'll just leave it at that.
The serial number's there, and that's kind of proof, don't you think?
Yeah. Now, I mentioned a few weeks ago, I was talking about Ernest Diamond Dick.
Oh, yes.
Ernest St. Leon.
Right, right.
When he was studying in San Antonio to become an attorney, he was studying under the name of a gentleman by the name of T.T. Teal. Ironically, T.T. Teal was the very same person that approached the Confederate veteran about finding the cannon up in Albuquerque.
Wow.
Great little tie-in between those two.
That's kind of weird.
Yeah, it is kind of weird.
A lot of stuff like that connects here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Should we take another break here? Is it about that kind of time?
It's about that
time. We should probably do that. Bernie's sticking around, got more info.
I got a
couple things. We have to talk about what happens when Sibley retreated through El Paso. That got kind of messy, didn't it?
Not too.
Well, somebody said they fired a cannon in San Elizario just out of spite.
They did make some noise down there.
So it goes here.
Hey, you know, make a noise.
Tell us what's on Facebook now.
Blank. My computer's not working well with me, so it's ignoring me and won't pay attention to me. But we were up to, 9,866 people at that time, and I think we've got some more since then.
We need about another 40 to get to 10,000. 40 people should go to our Facebook
page. And like our Facebook
page.
And
just click on it, like it, and slobber on it, whatever you do with it.
Yeah.
And then we'll get the numbers up.
Okay. Yeah, that'd be cool.
Let's just take a break. Shall we do that?
All right, let's do that.
Back in a moment.
Bye.
Monterey Asset Management is proud to sponsor the El Paso History Show. If you're tired of the ups and downs of the stock market, maybe you should invest in real estate. Monterey Asset manages apartments in El Paso and helps investors buy, hold, and sell properties. To learn more about the many benefits and long-term appreciation of investing in real estate, call Certified Property Manager Ray Baca at 915-592-4549. Call Monterey Asset Management to discuss your personal financial needs at 592-4549.
Walgreens has always been there to make caring for your health easier, and they still are, this time with Medicare. Simply visit walgreens.com/Medicare. There you can easily find the best, most affordable plan for you. Walgreens, they make Medicare easy.
If you don't know what to do when you get lost on a hike, Stuff You Should Know, an incomplete compendium of mostly interesting things, is here to help. And it also has an entire chapter on donuts. That's less useful if you're on a hike, but I mean, tell me that's not Stuff You Should Know. Stuff You Should Know, an incomplete compendium of mostly interesting things. Pre-order now at stuffyoushouldknow.com or wherever books are sold.
Jay Farner here, CEO of Rocket Mortgage. Making the right financial decisions has never been more important. When you turn to Rocket Mortgage, we can help guide you to those right decisions now when they matter most. Mortgage rates are near historic lows, so now is a great time to call 8338-ROCKET. And if you need some extra money, a cash-out refinance could give you that financial boost you're looking for. Call today at 8338-ROCKET or go to rocketmortgage.com to learn more.
Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030.
El Paso's News Radio, 690 KTSM.
And now let's turn back the pages of time and return to the El Paso History Show. Brought to you by Patrick Tuttle Legacy Real Estate Services, 915-585-7777. Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant, 6761 Donovan Drive. By Monterey Asset Management. By Mission Del Rey, 1421 Lee Trevino, with El Paso souvenirs and gift shopping. By Keystone Heritage Park on Donovan Drive, 915-584-0563. Here again, El Paso History with Melissa Sargent and Jackson Polk.
Here's something unusual you can do, but maybe not right now. Panic of the COVID being what it is. But the Rio Bosque is in El Paso's Mission Valley, and you can join the Friends of the Rio Bosque at Rio Bosque for a free walking tour or help with the habitat management. And if you want to get involved in that, the Bosque is what, you know what the Bosque really is?
It's kind of a mosque.
It's a
marshland.
Marshland.
Thank you.
And that's what all of El Paso was at one point.
Yeah.
When the Rio Grande would flood in like April or May in the old days, and before the dam up the river there, the whole place would turn into a marsh. Oh. I guess you could catch the catfish pretty good when they couldn't get out of the little pools of water. Anyway, call John Sproul, 747-8663. And they got a good thing going down there, and they got 300 acres, give or take. They put water in it, and they make it all marshy. And remind you of what it once was. That's a bizarre thing to do.
It's really cool over there. Now, you've also got Keystone Heritage Park is still open. Am I correct, Mr. Sergeant?
Yes.
Yes, okay. From 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Tuesdays through Sundays. So come on out there. Bring your mask. Keep your social distance. But it's not packed to the hilt. It's enough room for you to go out and really enjoy the park. And the weather is perfect to be out there right now.
Bring $5.
Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah, it's $2 for adults and $1 for kids. But if you want to bring us $5 or more.
Why not?
Yeah, you know, you can pay when you walk in the gate, and it's on an honor system. So
there
we hope you'll remember to do it.
Be honoring. All right, Bernie Sargent, we got a couple minutes left here to wrap up the Civil War. Sibley retreated through El Paso on his defeat in northern New Mexico.
Yes, and he was harassed along the way also. Stories about cannons firing and Isla and San Elizario to speed up his retreat, things of that nature.
Yeah, he got into some strange stuff. Did he go on to become famous, or was that the end of him?
Sibley?
Yeah.
He did. He ended up over in Egypt.
Oh, yeah.
He was a commanding general for the Egyptian military.
Really?
But his propensity for the John Barleycorn got him in trouble, and they fired his rear end and sent him back to the United States.
Ah, yes.
Boy, yeah. John Barley, he's a really popular guy,
he was, yeah.
Yeah, him and who was the other one? Jack Daniels.
Both bad influences.
Cousins there. Yeah. So what else do we need to know? We had the MacGoffins. They had a split with El Paso.
They did. Well, virtually all of the Southern sympathizers left El Paso in 1862 when the Union came back in and took control. And martial law was extended. They lost all of their property, all of their belongings that they didn't take with them. And either headed south or headed west. Some headed east, southeast. But eventually, the Mills brothers, W.W. Mills, Nansen Mills, worked diligently to help get the property back to their former friends, who they remained friends with, even though that there was a toast that Simeon Hart made when they seceded in El Paso. A glass of champagne for the victors, a hangman's noose for the losers.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. That sort of tells
cheers.
You. Like,
yeah.
That sounds like a great party.
Yeah.
Have a good time.
Yeah.
But, so they did work with them to get the property reinstilled and back to them. And most all of them came back, and they started their businesses back up and became successful became a very, very positive part of El Paso's growth.
Did Simeon Hart start up his mill again?
Yeah.
So Simeon Hart is it's now in modern days, that's La Hacienda Restaurant.
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm.
That was his house. And the actual mill was everything kind of like around it. And there was enough a drop in the river where they could take water up a little bit and turn a wheel on its way down.
Well, they
down.
Had, the wheel was not vertical, it was horizontal.
Horizontal.
Yeah,
so
which is unique.
They had enough capacity to turn that wheel once in a while.
Yeah, Simeon Hart was one of the richest people in the Southwest at one time.
Oh.
And it was because of that and the fact that, well, they ultimately, I think his son started the El Paso Times. And they were very, very big influence on the area, even after the Civil War. And the irony was, you look at Simeon Hart, he was originally from New York. So here he is, a Southern sympathizer. How does that happen?
Strange things, apparently.
Yeah.
Daryl alluded to the Anson Mills people making some military equipment. Why don't you take that one on? Because Anson Mills made a fortune on that, didn't he?
He did. He absolutely did. In fact, one of the problems they had with the new ammunition that people were using with the brass shells is brass and leather don't go well together.
So they were holding the brass shells in leather compartments on a belt or something?
Yeah, and over a period of time with moisture and so on, it adheres to the belt. You can't get those shells out very quickly.
Oh.
And so what Mills did, he came up with the idea of using canvas looped belts. I have one of those.
Oh.
I found one online and bought it. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
It's a work of art. And they were used all the way up through World War I.
So he invented that.
Yeah, he did.
The guy the Mills building is named after.
Along with Orndorff.
Orndorff.
Yeah, they teamed up to build that, the design and manufacture it.
So that's how they made their money? They came back to El Paso and spent it?
Mm-hmm.
So when did the Mills building go up? We said that was 1910, I think we said?
10 or 12.
But the point was, he was a Civil War guy.
Right.
And
right.
So he waited around, came back to El Paso, got a street named after him.
He did.
Also, didn't he resurvey downtown El Paso?
He did the first survey.
The only survey. Yeah, the first one.
And on that first survey, although, you know, the discussion has been that Oñate gave the identification to El Paso, he actually put on that 1859 map El Paso, even though it was Franklin or Coonstown or, you know.
So he changed the name from Franklin or whatever it was.
Well, on the map, it didn't officially change until after Paso del Norte took their name of Juarez.
But at one point there was a town south of here called El Paso del Norte,
yes,
a.k.a. Juarez now.
Yes.
Then the one he's talking about was Franklin. He changed it to El Paso. So for a while, the post office had no idea what to do.
Yeah, any number of names.
Letters sent to El Paso, have no idea. Just dump it in a river.
Well, you look at the military, you know, Fort Bliss, when the Pentagon identified Fort Bliss, they identified it being in Franklin, not in El Paso.
Well, Franklin was that's another weird story. Did he have anything to do with the Civil War?
No, he was in California by then.
But look, so Franklin was earlier.
Yeah.
And he managed to get the Franklin Mountains are named for this guy.
It was, yeah.
And do we think that actually came originally from Ben Franklin way back?
No. Benjamin Franklin Coons was his name.
But that's what I mean. It was Benjamin Franklin.
Yeah.
And most likely his name was probably
named
parents,
after Ben Franklin,
So, I mean, that came from Ben Franklin, but not directly.
Correct.
Came through this criminal.
Yeah. He was an entrepreneur. He came into town. He bought a lot of property from Juan Ponce de Leon.
Oh.
Ponce's Rancho. And, you know, aspirations of grandeur, ran into some financial problems and had to sell the land back, some to the original Ponce family and then some to other investors who, Mundy was one of them, who took the property and developed El Paso.
M-U-N-D-Y.
Correct.
Big street there in Sunset Heights.
Uh-huh.
And if you look on the land grant, we've got land plats, not the grants, but the Mundy property went all the way up the Franklin Mountains on the foothills.
Oh, yeah, all the way out to where American RV is.
On the west side, yeah all that in there was Mundy property. Is it still, or was it the family?
Some of it's still with the family.
Wow.
Small portions of it.
Are there Mundy people around here?
No, their names have changed since then.
Because there was a guy named Gary Mundy was on the weather maps.
I don't know if Gary was related
to
them.
How do you get a name like that? Who knows? Hey, Gary, if you're listening, call us real quick.
Tell us how you got that name.
Yeah, where'd you get your name from?
Tell us.
But, I mean, that was a big name. Okay, so the whole deal of El Paso history is intertwined with things not as big in the Civil War as, like, Gettysburg, et cetera.
Oh, correct.
Well, people throwing cannons at each other.
Yeah.
But down here, there was activity. It changed the pace here. And then the Fort Bliss came back into the hands of the Union.
Yes, 1862.
62, okay. Mm-hmm.
And stayed there.
Bizarre history we got here going on here. Well, Bernie Sargent, what else do we need to know about this era?
The furthest battle west in the Civil War was in an area called Picacho Peak, which is just north of Tucson, Arizona. And there was a group of California soldiers, California regulars, that were marching east to help in the battles along the Rio Grande. That was their aspirations, to get here and help the soldiers, the Union forces, fight the Confederates off, because they did not want the Confederates in California taking the gold. And on the way they marched, they sent out a scouting crew, and the scouting crew got to Picacho Peak with orders of not to shoot the Confederates. If they ran into them, wait till the rest of the force shows up. Well, unfortunately, they had a little commanding officer that got overzealous, and they opened fire, and he took the first shell.
Oh.
Yeah, so he died. So there was, I think, 7 soldiers died in that little skirmish at Picacho Peak, but that was the furthest west battle of the Civil War.
Are there any Confederate soldiers that were they buried in El Paso?
Yeah, there was 27 of them buried.
Where?
27 right after the Civil War, buried across the street from, it would be on the southeast corner of San Antonio and Overland.
San Antonio and Overland.
Yeah, okay. It's a parking lot now.
Oh, okay. So they're still under there?
As far as we know.
Oh, my.
I don't think they're going anywhere. There's
eight
inches of asphalt over
there.
They
didn't dig them up and put them in Concordia.
No, they kind of kept that quiet. I don't know why, but they kind of kept it quiet. So when they were digging up all the, I think, 6 or 7 cemeteries in downtown El Paso and relocating the remains, they skated right over that one.
So it's a parking lot now?
Yeah.
Oh, goodness.
Well, the Myers Opera House was there at one time, too, and then it burnt down. So over time, things have been built on that particular corner, including right behind the old Regis building, parking lot.
Interesting. Bernie Sargent, thanks for being here.
Hey, you're welcome.
Melissa, thanks for showing
Thank
up here.
You.
Next week we'll do it again.
Let's do it again.
Next week we'll have Zool Bailey on the phone and some music
to
play.
That's going to be cool.
And happy Veterans Day.
A bit different.
That's right. Yes,
and thanks
thank
again
you.
For your service and everyone else who was in that business. Thank you a lot. Andrew J. Polk, thanks a lot in there.
Thanks,
See
Andrew.
You Monday through Friday, 4 p.m., right?
That's right.
Thanks He's a lot. Take care,
He's
everybody.
Good.
See you next week.
Thank you for listening to the El Paso History Show. We hope you'll join us again next Saturday morning, 10 to noon, and be sure to tell a friend about us. Brought to you by Patrick Tuttle Legacy Real Estate Services, 915-585-7777. By Monterey Asset Management, Keystone Heritage Park on Donovan Drive, 915-584-0563. Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant, 6761 Donovan Drive. And by Mission Del Rey, 1421 Lee Trevino, with El Paso souvenirs and gift shopping. Thank you for joining us from the studios of News Radio 690 KTSM AM El Paso.